There goes my safety record. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast that's as popular as a straight-to-DVD in-name-only sequel. Now, in 1997, movie producers made a casting decision that changed the history of film as we know it. After making the die-hard-in-a-ski-resort thriller Crackerjack with Thomas Ian Griffiths, movie producers needed a new actor to take over the franchise. They could have chosen any number of established martial artists or action stars, men with proven track records in gunplay and butt-kicking. Instead, they hired Judge Reinhold. Many said it couldn't work, and many people who watched the film said it definitely didn't work. But could it be that Crackerjack 2 is actually a minor masterpiece of the video store era? To help me consider this important question, I'm joined once again by Brett and Ty from Comeuppance Reviews. Welcome back to the show, gentlemen.
Hi.
Oh, thanks for having us. I'm very happy to talk about some Crackerjack 2. I agree and was trying to suppress laughter during the intro there because what you're saying is funny and true about Crackerjack 2. And I'm sure we're going to get into that, but definitely happy to be here.
Thanks for having us back on.
Yeah, well, no, it's an absolute pleasure because I know this film occupies, I think I'm right in saying, a special place in your heart, because anyone who listens to your podcast, anyone who reads the reviews on your website will have noticed the frequent side references to Crackerjack 2. So I thought if I'm going to review this film, you two are the only two people I should have on the show to do it.
Appreciate that. Yeah, we've been championing this movie for years now. I mean, because when we watched it, we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, I guess we thought, if we thought anything, that it would be just another direct-to-video sequel and, ho-hum. That's not what this is.
No.
There's something special about it that I think people need to see.
Definitely. I'm delighted to be putting it in the spotlight on this particular episode, because I do think having watched this film earlier this year, I saw that magic for myself and I thought...
That's great.
I'm glad we're not the only ones.
But as I've alluded to in the introduction for this film stars quite an unlikely actor in the role of action hero. Now, I know you two gentlemen have watched a phenomenal number of video store and DTV films, many of which feature, wonderfully strange casts. So I wanted to ask you, who are the most unlikely actors or actor that you've seen cast as an action hero?
Well, Brett, we have a few examples.
Yeah. And we wrote down some examples. We have five examples, and there are others, but we have five, quick examples that we could run through. I would have to say, and this is a tough one, but very comparable to Crackerjack 2 and Judge Reinhold, we have Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah, Airborne.
Yes.
Airborne. His performance in Airborne is very Reinhold-esque, you might say, because both of them, which is a word that we've been trying to coin. Because both of them, it's almost like they had an idea in their minds, I'm in an action movie, so I have to talk in a certain way. So they both affect this sort of like gravelly, quote unquote, tough guy voice, which is just so funny and amusing. There's one scene in Airborne where all Steve Guttenberg does is answer the phone. The phone rings. He answers it. And it's very portentous. There's a very pregnant pause. And he goes, yeah. It's laugh out loud funny. All he says is yeah, but the way he says it is so funny. And so the movie itself is not great.
No.
But Gutenberg's performance, Gutenberg's performance is very amusing. And Sean Bean is the bad guy. So for that alone, I would say it's a one-time watch. But the Gutenberg factor really puts it over the top.
Well, I've only seen the trailer for Airborne, but that very much excited me. So I'm probably...
I love hearing that.
I know that you've warned me that the film is ultimately disappointing, but I feel like I still need to watch Airborne. So it's definitely on my hit list of films to see.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. Don't expect a masterpiece, but if you want to see an unorthodox action star, definitely worth seeing.
Well, who's next on your top five list?
My next one that I have is, and you might find this a little hard to believe, but Art Garfunkel.
Yeah, yeah, Short Fuse.
Now, there's a movie called Short Fuse. Yeah. Now, the cover, if you could see this box art, and I encourage everyone to Google image search this box art. It says short fuse. So you think, oh, there's going to be like an action star with a short fuse. And it's Art Garfunkel. So it's basically, I don't know if it actually says this, but basically it says Art Garfunkel has a short fuse. Now, when you think of someone who, you know, has a short fuse in the action movie context, probably the single last person you would think is Art Garfunkel. But there he is.
He's there on your box art, ready to have a short fuse.
That film sounds an absolute hot mess.
It is, and definitely worth checking out. People should track down this movie. I would recommend it.
Well, that's I'm jotting the name down right now. But yeah, who's in at number three?
In at number three, we have another musical star, John Denver.
Mm. Yes, it's a good one. Higher Ground is the title.
Yeah, so Higher Ground, it's basically John Denver is what, Ty? He's like an FBI or CIA agent.
Yeah, FBI agent.
And
like Keanu, right?
Alaska to uncover the baddies in Alaska. And
so bootlegging.
Yeah, there's like bootlegging, and it's very interesting casting. I mean, John Denver, another guy not known for his aggressive tendencies, but he does kind of quasi beat people up and kind of almost shoot someone. I think it was made so for TV. Yeah, so, but it's as close as you're going to get to John Denver as an action star.
Well, what an incredibly odd prospect that is.
It makes you wonder what the people behind the scenes were thinking. But as we always say, that's the joy of these movies. I mean, that you get an unorthodox person, and it's makes these movies worth rooting out and exploring and finding. And yeah, so John Denver would be the number three choice.
Mm. Number four? What's number four? I know number five. I think
number four is Don Rickles.
Oh yes, Don Rickles.
Now, Keaton's Cop.
Keaton's Cop is an amazing movie.
It's a canon movie. I don't even know. We could do a whole show on this because there's a lot to say about Keaton's Cop. But Don Rickles is in it, and it kind of revolves around an old folks' home and an aging gangster named Keaton, and
played by Abe Vigoda.
Played by Abe Vigoda, and Lee Majors is on the case, and Rickles is a police officer who gets involved in certain situations.
Yeah, there's some surprises.
Way too much.
Yeah, but there's some surprises.
You might need to. You might just want to say a few words as to who Don Rickles is, because
okay.
I think UK listeners are probably most likely not to be conversing with him. But
okay, yeah, I was worried one of these people maybe wouldn't translate from US to UK. But I figured if that happens, you would tell us. Don Rickles has passed away, but he was a very, very well-known comedian in the US.
Insult comic.
Yeah, he was known as an insult comic, and they also called him Mr. Warmth. And he had this very sort of energetic, old school, very politically incorrect, certainly by today's standards, form of comedy. And it was like bang, 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 bang. It was like joke, 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 joke. And he kind of represents the comedy of a bygone era, but it's so enjoyable, so entertaining. And let me just say this. When I first got an iPhone, the very first app I downloaded was the Don Rickles app, which is basically you touch it and he insults you. And
His head shakes.
But he's like an old school insult comic. That's kind of like the short blurb version. But you do love him. Like, it's not like you don't like him. He has a certain lovable quality, and that's how I would describe Don Rickles.
Well, you've whetted my appetite now, so I'm dying to find out who your last nomination pick is.
It's Anna Nicole Smith from Skyscraper.
I did wonder if she would crop up in this list. I did wonder.
She has to be number one. I mean, she has to be number one.
But she made quite a few action orientated films with herself in the lead.
Yeah, there's that and To the Limit.
Yeah, Skyscraper and To the Limit are kind of like her big two, if you want to coin a phrase. she played as someone named Carrie Wink. That's her name in Skyscraper.
I don't remember her name in To the Limit. I can look it up. But you
know. But she's a helicopter pilot, and she gets involved in Die Hard in a building.
Die Hard in a skyscraper.
they didn't change the plot of Die Hard at all. They just kind of swapped Bruce Willis for Anna Nicole Smith, which someone thought was a good idea.
I couldn't tell a difference.
So. Yeah, Skyscraper is it's quite a fun film to watch. I've not seen To the Limit yet, although it does feature an exploding helicopter, so it is on my list of movies to get to. But yeah, Skyscraper is a very amusing watch, and not the least of the reasons for that is Anna Nicole Smith as one of the most unlikely action stars you could ever hope to see in a lead role in a film.
That's why I think she made the number one slot on our kind of peacefully put together list of five action stars. And but you know, for people that are listening to this that want to explore the more unorthodox side of action, I mean, that would be a perfectly good place to start. Any of those would be a good place to start of the movies we just mentioned.
Basically, Short Fuse. That's definitely.
Well, I think we've set the scene very nicely for Crackerjack 2. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get stuck into that. So take it away, Trailer Man.
On a cross-country train.
Mr. Dolan, list of investors that you've asked for.
Loaded with riches. A band of international terrorists.
And what do you want from me?
You have a lot of money.
I want it.
Plan the ultimate high-tech heist.
A kidnapping without hostages. A ransom that isn't a ransom.
Perfect.
But there is one thing they didn't plan on. Detective Jack Wilde.
It's a blast from your past.
No one gets out alive.
In the finest traditions of movie policemen, Jack Wilde is a maverick cop who plays by his own rules. He suddenly finds himself embroiled in a hostage crisis when a train carrying his girlfriend is hijacked by terrorists looking to pull off an elaborate financial scam. But just as this starts shaping up as Die Hard on a train, the terrorists secretly move all the passengers into an underground bunker within a mountain train tunnel. So, with everyone trapped within an impregnable bunker, it falls to Jack to rescue the passengers and stop the terrorists before they can put the rest of their plan into action. Crackerjack 2 came out in 1997. The film was directed by Robert Lee, who, if you're a fan of 90s DTV, you may have come across before. He worked a couple of times with Michael Dudikoff on Cyberjack and The Silencer. The villain here is played by Michael Sarrazin, who is best known for his starring role in the excellent 60s drama They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Now, this film is a sequel to the original Crackerjack, which came out in 1994. The plot for that one was essentially Die Hard in a ski resort. In that film, Jack Wilde was played by Thomas Ian Griffiths. So obviously we've got some recasting here with Judge Reinhold taking over. There was also a Crackerjack 3 in 2000, where the lead role was recast again with Bo Svenson taking over. So with all that out of the way, let's find out what my guests thought. So, Ty, what did you make of Crackerjack 2?
Well, it's definitely a direct-to-video masterpiece.
Setting your stall out early there.
Yeah. Well, it's Judge Reinhold at his absolute best because he's doing everything you want in a movie. He's killing everyone. He's doing these hilarious faces. There's mugging he does. It's just absolutely hilarious. So how can you not love the movie? You and Carol Alt and all these great people. I'm speechless.
It is a film that I did feel slightly lost for words after yeah. watching it for the first time, because I just thought what have I just witnessed? I mean, it's both genius and possibly terrible at the same time, but somehow it exists in its own unique unique category.
Exactly. I don't know if I want to give away certain scenes because there's this part where he does this really funny jump. And of course, there's a great fight scene in his apartment with he might not be wearing too many clothes.
Yeah, as we pointed out in our review, there is a Judge Reinhold pantsless action scene. Now, why? Just why? Why? I mean, that's part of the inexplicable je ne sais quoi of Cracker Jack 2. It's, someone said, hey, Judge Reinhold, you don't need to wear pants while you're fighting the bad guys. No problem.
Mm. Pants here meaning trousers, obviously, for
UK.
Yes, but the point you're making is absolutely correct. That obviously, we have Judge Reinhold in very baggy very baggy, knackered, frankly, looking wife fronts, with a physique that doesn't look particularly like an action star. It's well upholstered, shall we say.
And, would they say dad bod?
It's definite dad bod territory. And I think he might just be. Has he also got socks on when he's doing this?
I think he does. Yeah.
But yes, he engages in martial arts combat with, you know, in a pair of wife fronts and still wearing his socks in his own apartment.
Exactly. I mean, the only thing missing are those like sock garters, those things that hold up your socks. That's the only thing missing from that ensemble that he's wearing during that amazing action scene.
I think we should really sort of probably dig a little bit more into Judge Reinhold in this film, because you know he was a famous face in the 80s, generally playing everyman type characters in a string of comedy driven films, things like Ruthless People, Vice Versa, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Obviously he was in the Beverly Hills Cop movies, which did have a lot of action, but his character there was essentially played for light relief. So, I think by any normal standards, he is unlikely casting in this film. So, I mean, what do we make of this attempt to remold Judge Reinhold as an action star?
About time. No, I think the filmmakers took a chance. Like I've said, it's an unorthodox way of thinking, which I like. I like the out of the box thinking. Yeah, they could have gone with a more traditional choice, but they went with Judge Reinhold, and I applaud them on their unusual approach. I mean, it's not necessarily their fault that the movie, as we said in the review, is probably the funniest comedy that's not labeled a comedy that you'll ever see. I mean, it's the results are humorous, but I give them an A for effort and for out of the box thinking.
I would love to see the casting director, like, who? We can't get Thomas Ian Griffith. We can't get Don the Dragon Wilson. Who can we get? How about Judge Reinhold?
And as Ty mentioned, the faces he makes, it's almost like he thought he could will himself into being an action star just by making a lot of funny faces. It's just, I mean, he bugs out his eyes, he screws up his face, he makes these crazy facial gestures, and that's part of the joy of watching it too. But it's like he thought, in order to become an action star, I had to make a bunch of faces and talk in a certain way, and of course fight without trousers.
Yeah, he does. In terms of his voice, he does seem to be trying to do a particularly bad John Wayne impersonation.
Yes, that's a great point. I'm gonna get the terrorists. It's like maybe Michael Madsen a little bit.
I can definitely hear that. I mean, yeah. I don't know if Reinhold would ever admit to imitating Michael Madsen. But
we all want to. But
we all want to.
But he does seem, Judge Reinhold does seem to be, it's very entertaining, but he does seem to be adrift in this film, in the sense of I don't think he seems to be playing it for comedy, but no one else is. And that just makes for a very strange dynamic within the film.
Well, that sort of dissonance, excuse me, that dissonance is what makes the movie unique and worth watching. So in a lot of places, you might even call it a train wreck. And I did not do it on purpose. In this case, I think, and maybe some people disagree with this, I don't think we will, but other people might disagree, I think it makes it work, because it's just so odd that somehow you're watching it and you're entertained, and the entertainment factor pretty much never lets up. And in a lot of these diehard movies, or the diehard, knockoffs, things start to flag, it's interest, comes and goes. This, you're pretty entertained the entire time.
That's what we were thinking when we were watching, like, you can't help but enjoy all 90 plus minutes of this great movie the whole time. So, as I say, the special, isn't in this movie, there's that kind of S&M kind of lady henchwoman, right?
Yes.
In this one.
Right.
And she's dressed, and she's dressed a bit like she's on the front cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album.
I remember that now. Did you say that? Because
you know, that's what S&M is all about.
I think that's what that's all we know. So.
Everything I know about S&M, I know from Cracker Jack too.
So. Well, because it's produced by Lloyd Samandal, this movie Hostage Strain, and he's always. If you look up his career, he loads up all these movies with women who look like that. All these movies in these chains, and they're like in jail, white slavery.
Yeah, most of his movies have to do with white slavery in some form or another, or he will have like a dominatrix type character. It's like something he does over and over and over again.
And
so,
Cracker Jack 1, too, there's like this kind of random nudity, and I just call that a Lloyd Samandal moment, because it's completely, it makes no sense to sneak that in, and there's some S&M character.
Yeah, because that lady villain is, as we say, she's definitely has that S&M vibe, because she quite clearly gets off on killing and hurting people, as the film suggests, and it's not even terribly that subtle as we see her. She's clearly having some erotic enjoyment from hurting and killing people in this film. But let's talk a little bit more, because we're kind of sliding that way anyway. Let's talk a little bit more about the villains in this film. So we've because you can't have a hero without a villain, and we've already spoken a little bit about I think her character's name is Jasmine. This sort of S&M loving female henchwoman, there are a couple of other sorts of villains that we should probably sort of mention here. So there's a kind of another sort of villain assistant who is kind of like a bookkeeper type character, who is he's this Brit guy with a very formal way of speaking. And then we obviously have the overall the head bad guy, who is rather blandly called Smith, who's played by Michael Sarrazin. What did you guys make of this very motley assortment of villains that we get in this film?
It's always these classic group of villains, right? With it's very similar to Die Hard. I mean, you got the nerd, you got the other nerd,
the sadist, and the brains.
Yeah, exactly. So there's not much originality, but because Judge Reinhold is at the helm.
Right. Well, as I would say, something for everyone. You know, it's, exactly. if you don't like one of the brain characters, then you'll definitely like the generic bad guy, or you'll like the quote unquote Euro trash guy with the indeterminate accent, who even he doesn't know what accent it is. And you know, and if all else fails, you got the S&M woman. So it really, they had all their bases covered.
Now, I know that you guys enjoy the many cliches that exist within the action genre, and it's fair to say that Crackerjack 2 is pretty thick. It's pretty rich with them. So, what are your favorites of the ones that we get to see within this film?
I would say the one where he's off the case. Right? Remember, there's a drug deal gone wrong.
Those
are my favorites right at the beginning.
and I'm sure we'll get to this later, but where Judge Reinhold is holding on to the bottom of the helicopter. Or as we said in the review, he's Reinholding on to the bottom of the helicopter. I think we see that in a lot, and I'm sure you've seen that in countless movies where, where the hero, or sometimes the villain, is kind of holding on for dear life on the, I'm not sure what you call those, the landing skids?
Landing skids or landing skis.
Yeah, and he's hanging on. And we might be getting to this later, I'm not sure, but I do find it interesting, and I'm sure you'll find it interesting, that the helicopter is shown prominently on both the US and the UK box art for this movie. So obviously they thought that was a big selling point, the helicopter aspect. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, because the movie is basically one 90-minute cliche. So it's kind of hard to parse them all out. But but that's what we love about the movie. Once again, when as we say on our own podcast, when we highlight the cliches, that's not meant to be negative. We're saying what we love about the movies. So it's hard to separate each and every individual cliche out, but if I had to pick in this, it would either have to be the Motley Gang of baddies or the hanging on to the helicopter.
I think for myself, I really enjoyed the kind of the train boss that we see in this film. So, you know, obviously we've got this train that's been taken over by terrorists and it's, you know, it's out of control running down these tracks. And so we see this employee of the train line who's, you know, thrown into this crisis situation. And, you know, he's the stereotypical sort of shouting, yelling chief that you often get to see in these movies. Yeah. And he really reminded me of, I think it's Robert Blake in Money Train.
Ty, one of your favorite characterizations.
I love that character, Money Train. Robert Blake. He could have his own podcast, his own show. He should have, just that character. Because if you remember in Money Train, Will, he's wearing this funny, like, kind of top hat towards the end of the movie. And it's like, we will get this money train. It's like a New Year's Eve. But why is he wearing a top hat? He says every horrible thing in the book to Woody and Wesley. It's crazy. He's absolutely out of his mind in that movie. So. I love Robert Blake in that.
So before we sort of wrap up the main review of Crackerjack 2, is there any parting thoughts that either of you two guys have about this film?
See it right now after listening to this podcast.
Well, so I guess what I would say about Crackerjack 2 is that it's an undiscovered gem. It was kind of languishing in the shadows a little bit. I mean, we've done all we can to raise the profile of the movie, but, you know, there's only so much we can do. So what I would say is see it. I believe it's on Amazon Prime right now if you have access to that. It's just something people should see and spread the word, and you'll have a lot of fun while watching it. So I would just right now put it in undiscovered gem status. And seek it out, and I'm sure you'll laugh when you watch it. Definitely worth a laugh. And you're not laughing at the movie necessarily, or you might be, maybe you will, but I think more likely is you'll be laughing with the movie.
Okay, thanks guys. I think we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about the exploding helicopter action.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of low budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptical prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs when the army are ordered in to launch a commando raid against the train. A team of soldiers are flown in helicopters to board the train and take it back. However, they are unaware that there's now no one on it and that it's been booby-trapped with explosives. When those are detonated, the two choppers get caught up in the explosion and blow up. Gentlemen, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action? And I'll throw this one to Ty first.
Well, it was very ridiculous looking because in classic, it didn't look very real. it looked very computer generated, and an explosion on top of that. So, they did those all over the movie too. When they're going in the train and there's all these kind of computer generated for 97 explosions. And it's like the best you could do.
I would pretty much echo that. I mean, Ty kind of stole my thunder on that. It's not the best looking exploding helicopter I've ever seen, but it's definitely in keeping with the tone of the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's definitely not out of place. That's for sure. Yeah. The CGI is, I mean, to be honest, for 1997, it's just impressive that they frankly got CGI in this film at all, because it's clearly not the highest budgeted film that's ever been made. So, frankly, it's just impressive that they've got any within it. The fact that the explosion is not terribly impressive is another It's another discussion point, but one thing that I did notice was the editing is slightly confusing of the exploding helicopters, because the first one we see get caught up in the blast and we see it get blown up, and then the second one appears to get caught up in the sort of the explosion being, you know, kind of continuing to expand. But then we cut to a shot of a helicopter falling directly downwards onto some rocks, which then blows up. So it's almost the editing almost makes it look like there's a third helicopter when there clearly isn't. But I think it's just, I don't know what they, I think it's just probably a kind of product of the fact that they weren't really quite clear what they were doing with this particular sequence, or I don't know how much CGI time they had to work with for this film.
Probably minimal.
Well, you get three for the price of two, or three for the price of one. I mean, it's, you know, it's a net benefit.
I'm certainly not complaining, that's for sure.
I'm happy you're not.
Isn't there kind of like a funny shot of like, how do I describe this? We're inside the train and it's sort of like rushing forward. It's like, it kind of looks like an artificially sort of like sped up look, and that kind of adds to the whole vibe of what we're seeing.
The whole vibe of this movie is just off.
Or is it not? We don't know.
But for exploding helicopter fact fans, I should mention that this is, you know, this is not the only train related exploding helicopter that is out there. So at the very end of the classic Blue Thunder, you get to see a helicopter being rammed by a train in that film and blown up. Also in the film Lasco Death Train, we get to see a train ramming a helicopter there and being blown up. And we also, in the film, I think it's Super Cop 2 with Jackie Chan and Michelle Yeoh, you get to see a helicopter that has kind of crashed on top of a train being blown up after the kind of the wreckage of the helicopter sort of hits a metal structure that's going over the train line. So, you know, this film adds to, you know, is part of a small but very perfectly formed group of films which, you know, feature train-related exploding helicopters. So you've witnessed a little bit of cinema history here, gentlemen.
I'm happy we have.
Absolutely. And on the box art, which I, you know, keep going back to, but I do think it's worth mentioning that they tried to kind of emulate that on certainly the UK box art, and I think the US DVD as well, where they have like some what looks like maybe clip art or like generic train, like a generic train, and they kind of superimposed the helicopter over it, because I think, you know, they obviously knew that was like the big moment of the movie, so they tried to recreate it for the front of the box. And also they ran out of room, so it Judge Reinhold, the name Reinhold is hyphenated for the first time ever. It's just Rein-Hold, and that's very odd to see, and probably indicating what you might see, because it's odd and offbeat. So even that alone, just that one little dash, is a little clue as to how offbeat and weird the movie is.
And what's funny is that offbeat, that's a Judge Reinhold movie.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Right, can you imagine, he's like a librarian and becomes a cop or something like that.
What more do I need to know about that film? Judge Reinhold is a librarian who becomes a cop.
Something like that.
Are there hilarious consequences to that setup or not?
I remember a lot, yes. I was rolling in the aisles, I think.
I mean, if they played it seriously, it could be like a Cracker Jack too, but it's probably a comedy, right?
Yes.
Well, I do approve of the fact that helicopters feature prominently on the artwork for this film. You know, I like to see helicopters prominently used to market films, but only when they actually feature heavily within the films. Nothing irritates me more than when helicopters are used just as, I don't know, some sort of like visual garnish to fill in some blank space on a poster or some cover art. I disapprove strongly of that. So any film producers, studios listening, please stop doing that. It's really very irritating. I want to see, you know, if you're going to have a helicopter on your cover art, then there needs to be a helicopter within the film. I mean, that just That should be kind of like a one of the kind of producers' guild regulations that exist.
Yes, I agree with that for sure.
That Michael Madsen movie, Supreme Sanction. Right?
Oh, that's right. There's a helicopter on the cover of that.
Yeah, there's like some prominently placed helicopters. Yeah. Technically, there are helicopters in the movie, so they didn't cheat in that sense, but it's not what the movie's about. There's like some helicopters in the beginning, but the plot in 95% plus of the movie doesn't have to do with helicopters, but they put the helicopters kind of front and center because they kind of make it look like a helicopter-based movie, but it's really not. So that's, yes, there are some helicopters. They didn't lie, but they did kind of fudge it. So I'm guessing you wouldn't approve of that.
I wouldn't, and I actually think we might need to have some more sophisticated rules whereby, you know, if you're the percentage of space on your poster for with helicopters needs to relate to the kind of space within the plot or the story for helicopters. So a bit like writing credits are kind of arbitrated, with the sort of people percentage of contribution taken into account for their credits on the film. I think there needs to be similar rules for poster and artwork design, for how much helicopters actually exist within the film and how much of a role they play on the artwork of the film. I mean, I think this stuff really needs tightening up.
Well, have you seen, and this is kind of obscure, so you might not have seen this, but there is a movie that came out on VHS in the US. I'm not sure if it got a UK release, but it's called Countermeasures.
Oh, and, is that Dudikoff?
Yeah.
And it actually has Monty Markham, who was kind of like an actor of a prior generation, but it's all about helicopters. And it's all about, I think that Monty Markham plays like a helicopter trainer of some sort, and he's training his guys in helicopter flight. And it's not the most exciting movie, but they're not lying when it's about the helicopters.
No. It's nonstop.
Yeah, it's all helicopters all the time. So if you like helicopters, I would seek out this movie called Countermeasures. But yeah, there are several movies called Countermeasures, but this is the one with Monty Markham.
I will have to investigate. Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming back on.
Would one
or perhaps both of you like to take a moment to tell everyone about the expanding Comeuppance Reviews media empire?
Go for it.
Okay, I can hit it with we're on all these podbean catchers. Right, so as Amazon Music, we're on Spotify, iTunes, of course.
Yeah, iTunes I think is where most people catch us. We're also on Google Play, iHeart, TuneIn, pretty much all the pod catchers, and of course the website itself, comeuppancereviews.net, where you can read our reviews and check us out there. But yeah, so just Comeuppance Reviews.
And then there's my Instagram, which I post all the tapes, which is Thai Action Rocks. So check that out too.
So yeah, those are pretty much all our plugs. So yeah, check out the website, check out the podcast if you haven't. Comeuppance Reviews. If you search that, you'll find us.
Yep, big recommend from me. Go and check out what these guys do online. It's incredible. I'm in awe of the amount of films that you have reviewed.
Thanks.
1,200 and counting over on Comeuppance Reviews.
It's just wow, you're paying attention. We're over 1,200 right now. I mean, but the site's been going for how long, Ty?
10 years.
Oh yeah, 10 years. So.
an incredible feat. So
that's an honor saying that, hearing that from you.
Yeah, I take my hat off to you, gentlemen. But after you've done
top hat,
yeah, I take off my top hat. But after you're done checking out Comeuppance Reviews, don't forget to come out and check out Exploding Helicopter's own website, which is explodinghelicopter.com. If you can help us spread the word about what we do, I'd be very grateful. I rely on word of mouth to promote Exploding Helicopter. So if you can help us out, it'd be very much appreciated. We'll be back soon. But until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.